Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're gonna play on and stand strong. With Drolo and Dibs, turn the game on. Pump up the volume. It's time to play ball. With Drolo and Dibs, turn the game on.
All right, happy holidays. President's Day, it's Joe Lowe and Dibs. We're not taking the day off. We're here. We're grinding. 95.7 the game. Great to have you along with us today. Big day. Big week. Big month here at the station. Couple points of parliamentary procedure before we get rolling here. Your guest list. John Morosi at 6:30. Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, spoke over the weekend. He made it worse. Shocker. Brian Scalabrine, NBA champion. He's going to join us in an hour to talk about last night's All-Star game. You can light the phones up now if you want. 888-957-9570. What did you think of the Elam ending? The Elam ending is what that is known as. John Shea could be joining us today. We're working out the details on that. Now, couple big points of news for today. First and foremost, today is the beginning of the Dream Job Contest. It has officially launched. So if you want to be an on-air personality here at 95.7 The Game, if you want to win that job, it's a pretty sweet job, if I may say, today's where it starts. 1 minute video with your best sports take, best rant, whatever you want to do, but 1 minute, submit it at 95.7thegame.com. That's it. One rule I got to throw in there. No music. Can't have any music in the background. Those will be disqualified. So if you're laying a track down in the back, get rid of it. Just go with a 1 minute rant. We will select the 16 best videos and have you compete against each other at our live event Saturday, March 7th. If you need the full details, visit 957thegame.com. Woo, that's one. Now, free throw contest, Chase Center, 9 days from today. Wednesday, February 26th. Qualifications start today. We got 10 spots to give away to be in the free throw contest every day this week, 7:45 and 8:45. Listen from 7 to 7:30. We're going to ask a trivia question at 7:45 about that previous segment. Listen at 8 to 8:30. We're going to ask you a trivia question at 8:45 about the previous segment. That's what we're doing every day this week. And, of course, 9 days from today, Low versus Dibs, the main event at the free throw shooting contest, is you two will be going one-on-one in what is being dubbed the disgrace at Chase. I'm all out of breath. How you doing? You trained this weekend at all?
Yeah, I trained pretty hard, Joe. I was out there putting up some shots, and really, it's about maintenance at this point, because as Lowe likes to say, the hay's in the barn, really. I'm not going to necessarily get much better, quote-unquote, at basketball, but it's important that I continue to try to maintain physically where I'm at. I will say this, though, ton of mental reps. Virtually every moment of my waking day, I'm thinking about my strengths, his weaknesses, my weaknesses, and how that this can play out in my favor. Lo, we talk a lot about my lucid dreams ever since I put the thinking chair on the curb. Yeah. Each and every night, one of my four lucid dreams is about Low versus Dibs.
You should keep having them, because I'm telling you, they're not going to. They're probably going to be.
Oh, they're not nightmares. They're dreams.
They're going to be probably more rapid and more frequent the closer we get to this day. I went out. It's interesting. Did some work on the homes this weekend and got a couple I'm putting up for Sojo and out there painting, cutting trees down, and freaking just doing tough labor. And I had a ball, bounced it. I was like, God, I want to get out and shoot some hoops, because it's a Meadow Lane school. Is in Lemoore. It's about a couple blocks away from the houses that I'm working on. Those
right there.
Right there. Got working, bounced the ball in the front yard, looked down the street, saw the school, thought about Dibs, and like, do I really need to train for this bum? And I'm honestly, I was like, God, I'm like, what could possibly go wrong? Do I blow an Achilles? What could possibly? And then I was like, oh, the hell with that dude. So
Just went back to painting fences.
Went back to painting fences.
Wax the floor, paint the fence. Thank you, Miyagi.
Like, you're talking about you have those, and I did. I said, man, you know what? Maybe I should get a couple shots in. Maybe I'm like, okay.
Maybe I should get a few jumpers in just to get some depth perception.
Yes, and then I thought about, like you said, Mr. Wax on, wax off, Joe. Paint the fence. Do it the right way. I was on the
show Cincinnati. Me sand the floor, all that.
That was it.
All right, we'll have more on this throughout the day. There are a few details that continue to emerge for the event. We're working on the T-shirts. We're hoping to have a bunch of those to give away. We're hoping to have a Monday night dinner event 2 days before. So we're 9 days away from the Disgrace at Chase. More on that throughout the course of the show. Speaking of hoops, what y'all think of the NBA All-Star game last night? Again, I'm going to start with this. When everyone's telling you one thing, don't be adamant about, you know, jumping on board. You don't have to follow the norm. It's like they tell you when you're a kid, if your friends are all going to jump off the Brooklyn Bridge, I guess that's what they tell you on the East Coast anyway, are you going to do it? And everyone liked the over in the Super Bowl. We said, maybe you consider the under. Everyone said this new format was going to be crap, but when it's all said and done, Team LeBron 157, Team Giannis 155, that game was a thriller.
Thriller in Manila. Went down to the wire. You seen old friggin' Giannis block, swat LeBron. He gets the rebound back. I know they're having fun and showboating, but I'm going to tell you, it got a little chippy there. They start getting a little physical, start going after that $300,000 check. I start putting it down, and then, you know, Kawhi, you know, he goes out, gets you 30 points. I mean, guys are showing some talent out there. I like that.
Kyle Lowry took a charge, for God's sake.
He took multiple charges.
When was the last time you saw a guy putting his body on the line? I thought that the format had a chance to be better. I'm a guy who's always liked the All-Star game, and I really loved the Rising Stars on Friday night because that was kind of like the old school, let's just go out there, throw the ball up, and you see the end of the game, they cleared the deck for Zion, three straight possessions.
That was cute.
He missed all three dunks.
Yeah, but they had fun.
They were having a great time. That game I really enjoyed, and that's what the All-Star game used to be. But with this new format, my God, they were playing like they were playing for the court with a three-game wait. You know, you play in the old pickup games, and you know that if you lose, you're sitting out for two, if not three games, and so guys are playing like it's every last possession is the last possession of their life. It was really fun.
I just hope that coronavirus didn't break out there. As you see all this stuff's going on, all those people, that
odd
many
pivot.
Places.
We're moving. We're having a good time. We're agreeing that we enjoyed it. Bring up coronavirus.
I mean, please explain.
You know what? Now we're going to see that one out. You're just happy the coronavirus didn't break out at the NBA All-Star game. That's the takeaway.
I, too, am happy it didn't break out at the game.
I didn't think I was happy that it didn't break out because I hadn't thought of it, but now I am thinking about it. And yes, I'm also happy coronavirus didn't break out at the UC last night.
Right. All the traveling, the people flying to an event, the different tight quarters, all the things that are going on there. You see another ship. You see all the things that just happened. They have a scare. And this man, people are still going about their life. I'm just happy that there are a lot of people, NBA, you would hate for that thing to strike there.
Yeah, it really puts things in perspective.
The hot take. I, too, am happy that the entire NBA All-Star game was not.
Just one of those men, one of those things happen. You see certain things. All of a sudden, we're talking. You see something, and it just made me just to go there. So, you know.
Would also like to make it clear that I'm happy no asteroids hit the Earth yesterday and ended humanity, as we know it.
Also hot.
Big day for all of humanity not getting wiped out yesterday. That was pretty sweet. And, you know, no ice age started, and no nuclear weapons went off, from what I can tell.
I should keep the bacon going.
This is a pretty good Sunday.
Yeah.
Mine was more logical than asteroid, right?
Yours was actually more ridiculous because at least people know we're coming in with shtick right now. You came in with an actual take that you were happy coronavirus didn't break out at the United Center in Chicago during last night's All-Star game. Plus, you probably don't even actually know if that's true because it's not like they're going to show signs right away. So it could have happened and then people could start manifesting symptoms in the next few days, at which point that take would need to be, dare I say, funeralized.
Yes. I think a better pivot would have been to highlight the Jennifer Hudson opening song tribute to Kobe and Gia Bryant, which was one of the better sports musical performances in the history of sports musical performances. She absolutely killed it. She was amazing in that 6-minute tribute. I think that would have been a more appropriate pivot.
Maybe Steven can play a little bit of that coming back and, you know, coming that. Would love to.
Perhaps. And poor Chaka Khan for having to come out and sing the national anthem after Jennifer Hudson, because Chaka Khan's an unbelievable talent. She's a great singer, but having to follow that
tight
up,
spot,
it's impossible.
Real tight spot. Halftime, too, Chance the Rapper and all the tributes that were taking place. it's taking place in Chicago. Bring out the best Chicago has to offer. Yeah. Put them on the stage for everyone. The NBA did a really nice job this weekend in Chicago. It seems like every event, you can argue the slam dunk contest. We can get into all the details of what we did or did not like about the events themselves. But the reality is, it seems to have gone off without a hitch. There were a lot of great tributes. They handled themselves well. Again, no coronavirus breaking out. Apparently big as well. Thank you, Lowe, for bringing that to the table.
Too bad we got to go to break, Joe. But what about those poor people in Mississippi? Those floods, man. Unreal.
This guy. I mean, what else? What else you got?
You know what? I'm moving into his camp for this event in 9 days. The way he's approached the whole thing versus you and your commentary.
Joe, why are you?
Joseph.
Because now it's like if I want to go on the Manfred rant, it's like, well, at least I don't have coronavirus, so why do I really care? It's like you've devalued every piece of sports news today as I look in the mirror and I'm like, well, at least, you know, I don't have coronavirus.
This is Cozumorian, the way he's just scattershotting.
We should throw him out of here. Get the hell out of here. Langford, what's up with the Warriors?
That's, you talk about tough one to follow after Jennifer Lawrence. Oh my gosh.
It doesn't matter at this point.
What's up with the Warriors is brought to you by Ceremony Ford, your San Francisco Ford dealer. This was the first All-Star game since 2015 without Stephen Clay involved, but it was a good one as Team LeBron won 157-155 over Team Giannis. We did have Warriors rookie Eric Paschal involved in the Rising Stars game. He led Team USA in scoring with 23 points on 13 shots, and Team USA, by the way, won by 20. Back to you guys.
Thanks for keeping that to sports. Greatly appreciated. Lowe's going to want to talk about how Daytona went yesterday. By the way, the Great American Race postponed to today. Daytona rained out only 20 laps. Trump led one of them. Trump's got more laps led than Jimmy Johnson so far. So that's where you're at with Daytona 500. We'll have Daytona locks for you to end the show. I'm thinking we come away with some Daytona locks today. We give the people Daytona locks. We got Wilder Fury on Saturday. We're going to have locks for that throughout the course of the week. Next segment, I promise, we're actually going to get into some basketball and the All-Star game and what we saw last night. A couple elements of that game that were phenomenal. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe Lowe and Dibs.
And there was times that he would actually freeze balls.
On 95.7 The Game.
Big question. We talked about that last week. A's got him first. First road trip of the year for the Astros is going to be in Oakland. Very excited to see what the A's are going to do in that scenario. Manfred's out there telling everyone, no retaliation. No, I hope they all know they shouldn't be throwing at these guys. You know, they suffered enough, essentially. Yeah, they've suffered all right. No fines for the players. No suspensions for the players. You're not taking their World Series away. It kind of seems like they robbed the bank and got away with it because they narked out their manager and their GM. More on that with Morosi at 6:30, 6:45. NBA All-Star Game, Team LeBron 157, Team Giannis 155 in a game that was decided by two or fewer points. First time that's happened in 10 years for the All-Star Game. Kawhi Leonard was named the MVP, which is now being called the Kobe Bryant MVP Award. Very classy touch from the NBA right there. Leonard was incredible. He scored 30 points, 11 of 18 shooting. He was 8 of 14 from deep. 7 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals. He joins Michael Jordan as the only players in NBA history to win an All-Star Game MVP, a Finals MVP, and a Defensive Player of the Year award. Now, for those of you who are still confused as to how this game worked, 3 12-minute quarters, first quarter, second quarter, third quarter. The winner of each quarter got $100,000 for their charity. So the first quarter was won by Team LeBron, $100,000 to their charity. Second quarter was won by Team Giannis, $100,000 to their charity. Third quarter was a push, so the money rolled over to the fourth. The fourth was a different game entirely, okay? It's untimed, and it has what's called the Elam ending. Now, I'll explain the history and the origin of that at some point in the very near future, but entering the fourth, they added up the three-quarter scores for Team Giannis and Team LeBron, and whoever had the higher score, in this case it was Team Giannis, it was 24 points to the target score. So at that point, I believe Team Giannis had 133 points, add 24 on for Kobe Bryant, and that puts it at 157. So that was your target score. First to 157 wins. So Giannis' team only needed 24 points. They were leading, I'm not sure by how many. They were up by 9. So that meant Team LeBron needed 33 points to win the game. And this was a game. I mean, they went at each other in this game. They started playing defense. Let me break down some of the stats here so you have an idea. First three quarters versus the fourth quarter. There were more fouls in the fourth quarter, 21, than the first three combined, 14. There were 3 offensive fouls in the fourth quarter. 0 in the first three. There were twice as many free throw attempts in the fourth quarter, 26, as there were in the first three quarters, 13. No fast break points in the fourth quarter, 50 fast break points in the first three quarters. Three dunks in the fourth quarter after 48 dunks in the first three quarters. The teams combined to shoot 36% in the fourth quarter versus 56% in the first three. The moral of the story here, and I could go on all day with this, is that they played defense in the fourth quarter. They really wanted to win. And when you knew LeBron's team, which got into range first, just needed a three to win the game and that they were going to go for the three, everyone was standing. Like, that was unbelievably exciting at the end of that game, in my opinion.
It was super fun. The only thing that was a little bit of a bummer was that it got ended on the free throw line.
Ah, here we go.
Well, that's, and that really is the only, you would have wanted to see it ended on a three or a two, and there were chances. Each side had chances to win it, so the drama was there in place. It was just a little bit of a buzzkill that it came down to the free throw, although Anthony Davis missed the first one, so there was a little bit of drama, but he's an 85% free throw shooter. You kind of knew he was going to make it, but the format was an absolute smash hit.
Some people felt that the refs got a little too involved at the end of that game.
What are they supposed to do? These guys are out there, 10 of the best players on the planet, and they're going tooth and nail at each other. And ultimately, the refs made great calls. The goaltending call, which was a bang-bang play, they reversed it on review. It was really close. Did the ball hit the backboard first? Did he get it first? That was a tough one. I was surprised they reviewed it and reversed it, but the referees, as is often the case, excellent job.
Ending on a free throw. A lot of people are a bit bummed out about that.
And that's one thing. If you just listen to Mr. Dibley, it's always amazing just to listen to his initial statement. And then as you throw one question out there, he goes right back. You or assume or what? Then he changed. Oh, no, I didn't say that. He said, God, it was a bummer. And it's on a free throw. And you talked about the 3-point. Well, you talk about they had a chance. Well, the officials doesn't do that job. Maybe get the ends what you wanted to see in that bomber take that you said, I'm bombed. Maybe it's a three. And then you wouldn't be bombed. Did the official maybe keep the whistle in his mouth?
Did you see the play? Kyle Lowry basically hooks his arm and drags Anthony Davis to the floor. You had to make that call.
I'm just asking. I'm just talking about something that you desire. You wanted to see it, so it took the drama out. And who took it out?
Well, before that, James Harden hits a three that would have won it, but it was an offensive foul on James Harden.
Love that.
Prior to him hitting the three, the classic.
So who took the fun out of that?
It's James Harden. He committed an egregious act.
But the point is,
watch the game and you'll understand that they adjudicated it actually quite excellently.
One of the best parts, subtle undertone of the end of that game, was that those rules and the way that was played did not suit Harden one bit. Harden was a fish out of water in that game at the end because Harden couldn't get his ticky-tack calls and get to the line. They let him play a little bit. They did make calls to put these guys on the line, but every one of the calls was physical in nature, very physical. There was a play where Kemba Walker was down in the top right corner, if you're looking at it on TV, where they were chasing the ball. He took a shot and there was no call. LeBron got drilled going up for a three-pointer. Every NBA game on the planet, he gets his three shots. They didn't give them to him. His arms are up running back. They let them play down the stretch, and Harden was the fish out of water. It didn't work for him. It did not work at all. He got called for an offensive foul, at least one. He may have been called for a second, but it was awesome to see his ticky-tack game neutralized when they let him play and they play good defense. One of the things I'll throw out there, a suggestion for the future if you're going to go with this, nobody wants to see it end on the free throw. I think we'd all agree to that. I don't think it's that big of a deal today because it's the first time through and it was a lot of fun. In that situation late in the game, if there's a foul, take a point away from the other team. Rather than send a guy to the line to score a point, take away a point from the team committing the infraction. That way, the team that's leading still get something because they were fouled, but you don't create a situation where you can put the guy on the line and you win like that, because everything else about that was fun last night. It was great seeing 10 of the best in the world. That shimmy shake Embiid put on LeBron and just shook him out of his drawers. All those dudes were forced to play at their absolute best, and it was a fantastic performance.
And none of them wanted to come out of the game. That was the part that I loved. It was kind of subtle there, too, because you had 10 of the best in the game on the floor, and there was no one running to the scorer's table. Those guys were going to finish that game on their own and on their own merits, and you don't see that in this era of load management in the regular season. You had these guys all out there wanting to be out there, wanting to see it out. LeBron James tried to hit a 43-footer to win it, in and out, and heartbreak. It was just great to see the desire they showed, and it just shows you what the All-Star game could potentially be.
It was very cool. Very cool indeed. It did get me thinking, and our producer John Curley put this in the email last night. He's concerned as to whether or not we could have a great idea like the disgrace at Chase, but because of something unforeseen, we end up having a bad ending. He was referring to the dunk contest, how Gordon apparently got jobbed again. But the ending of this is some people say, eh, I wish it wouldn't have ended on free throws. How do we avoid any sort of calamity, Low versus Dibs, disgrace at Chase, 9 days from today, Wednesday the 26th?
Well, it just depends on how we want to, you know, tweak the format, because Matt Steinmetz offered some concerns on Friday about the fact that 11's too high and we're going to be exhausted. And that really is the only thing that could be unfortunate, is if we play 20 or 30 minutes and the score's 5-4 or something. That's the only thing. So maybe we look at putting a time on it and then doing the Elam format in Low versus Div in some way.
The Elam format. The guy who created it, Philadelphia. Some kid, he was working on, they sent this out to everybody. I'm going to give you the full breakdown on it later, but someone worked on this, some analytical guy, and they employed it in a low-level tournament in Philadelphia. Apparently it was a success. He went home, he studied it on ESPN3, and then they pitched it to the NBA and all these other people, and that's what they ended up going with.
Totally unique. We used to do this at the YMCA up in Terra Linda. You'd play 15-minute games of pickup. And whatever the score was after 15 minutes, you'd add two to the team that's leading. That way these pickup games just don't go on and on.
It was a lot of fun. NBA All-Star game, a lot of fun for the first time in a while to see some competition like that. All right, what's coming up in the game is brought to you by Chilton Auto Body. John Morosi, one of the best insiders in the business, set to join us next. I'm going to put this out to baseball fans, specifically A's fans, because we're going to want to hear from you throughout the course of the day. How do you want to see Astro opponents handle the Astros this season? Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, came out and said he doesn't want to see any retaliation. He doesn't want to see any teams throwing at these guys. I don't know if that's going to be enough to stop it. The A's are the first team the Astros are going to face when they go out on the road this year, so all eyes are going to be on Oakland. I'm curious as to what Oakland A's fans, who have had to reside in this division with the Astros for quite some time now, what they're going to say about it. 888-957-9570, but we'll get that from Rob Manfred and more. As the A's and Giants, they got it done. They had a trade over the weekend. First trade in, what was it, 14 years? Had the details here. 14, boop, boop, boop. Whatever, we'll get to that later. Nobody plans on getting into a car accident, but if you do, there's only one place to go. Chilton Auto Body. With 11 convenient Bay Area locations, they're just a call or click away. Stop in or go to ChiltonAutoBody.com to schedule a free estimate. ChiltonAutoBody.com.
Now back to Joe, Lo, and Dibs.
Big Fish Dinner.
On 95.7 The Game.
I want to start with Commissioner Manfred, who met with Carl Ravitch over the weekend and spoke to him. He met with the media down in Florida. The retaliation aspect of this, talking about how he doesn't want other teams retaliating. He expects that to not happen. I don't know. How are you going to be able to slow that down this year? It feels like everyone's going to be out for vengeance.
Well, good morning, and you're right. That's one of the many difficult aspects of this story right now. And for a long time, baseball, for obvious reasons, has, I think, struggled to properly adjudicate a lot of the purpose pitches that we have seen for various reasons, and what constitutes a purpose pitch. Does it have to actually hit the player for it to be something that is suspendable? So there are so many questions here for MLB to face and really reckon with, and this is just one of them. I do think we will see MLB try to be as forceful as possible, and it was interesting to me as well the fact that the commissioner talked about how, separate from the Astros situation, that MLB has taken a more aggressive stance in general against purpose pitches, and with plans to increase the discipline for those purpose pitches apart from the Astros. So I think we will see in general longer suspensions and larger fines this year for pitches that are deemed to have been thrown at individuals. But I think part of the issue here is the umpires themselves. How do they handle things? What guidance are they given to, for lack of a better term, protect the Astros players from that form of justice? So it's just one layer of a very difficult process. I do believe the commissioner will stand by his words and have very stiff penalties for those who throw at the Astros, but that does not mean that no one is going to do it during the course of the 2020 season.
What recourse then do teams have to get a pound of flesh out of the Astros when they feel like they were wronged for this cheating scandal? Because teams aren't just going to take the commissioner's words and go quietly. What else do you think might happen to where teams are going to get what they think that they have coming to them as far as the Astros goes?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I think aside from throwing at people, which I still would question the wisdom of that in any context, whether it's this or bat flipping or other forms of offenses that are taken in modern baseball. There really is not much aside from beating the Astros and potentially, as you think about the global baseball community, shunning them, if you will. And this has, I realize it's not really a measurable penalty or one that may excite or satisfy a lot of fans, but we do see in the game now.
Let's go ahead and work on the connection here. It looks like we dropped John for just a second. We'll bring John Morosi on back in a moment. The idea that you could enforce stiffer penalties and infractions to players throwing at Astros players, that seems as if those guys are going to be punished worse than the Astros players were.
They are.
We'll discuss that in a little bit. Let's bring John Morosi back on. John, sorry we lost you there for a moment, but we cut you off pretty quick, so feel free to jump right back in.
Sure. The answer is not much. I think in terms of what retribution teams can actually pursue outside of the purpose pitches, which, as we've already discussed, are going to be dealt with, we believe, with pretty big discipline from the commissioner's office. And really, I think a lot of the penalties, and this is sort of fitting with the way MLB has handled it to this point in time with the players themselves, it's almost as though the league is hoping that the culture of the game itself, the baseball world, the relationships in it, that from a social standpoint, that it's almost enough. We can argue that it probably won't be enough in the minds of many, but that is, I think, to some extent what the commissioner is falling back on here, that the way the fans are reacting every time the Astros play on the road, the way that other players are reacting during batting practice, during those times, during the stretch times of the game where you typically will see players talking with one another casually, that the Astros players are, to some extent, becoming outcasts in the game, and that there is a certain social punishment that goes along with that. I think we can certainly argue that does not rise to the level of having a championship trophy taken away from you, but I believe that rightly or wrongly, that is what MLB is relying on right now to mete out that level of justice as the year goes along, and that I think is why there is a real shortage of satisfaction on the part of a lot of players, including some prominent ones like Cody Bellinger and Chris Bryant, who have spoken out here in recent days.
John, put yourself in the commissioner's position as well as the Astros owner. How different would you have handled it? I know it's hypothetical, but how would you have handled it? What would be the rhetoric you would have got out there? How could you have controlled your message?
Well, it's a very fair question, Lo, and I think that to me it's a difficult one to really parse. And the commissioner has been put in a very difficult circumstance, as he told Carl Ravitch and as he has spoken about previously. To be able to get to the truth, he had to give immunity to get cooperation somewhere along the line. And I think that at the end of the day, he did the right thing to that point. If he did not grant immunity, then on this day, we would still not really know the full story. I think we know maybe not the full story, but we know a lot of the story, enough to be able to determine, in my view, that championship is tainted. And the fact that there were penalties associated with the team in those years, I think they're a pretty heavy indication from the commissioner's office that championship is tainted. You can't penalize that severely and suspend executives for a year. The commissioner concluded that the messages about what was appropriate behavior were in fact not communicated from the GM level on down, and he said publicly that he believes that they would have lost, MLB would have lost any grievance in which they tried to penalize the players because they were not fully informed by their own management as to what the rules were. So I think in an imperfect situation, the commissioner did a very good job of penalizing the organization in a way that communicates to all of us, everybody, that there was cheating going on in 2017 and 2018. Well, we all know that to be true. And I think that for the Astros to, in the midst of that, stand up and say, well, we do not believe the championship was tainted. We believe that you're alleging that there were issues in 2019 when, in fact, from where I sit, it's really hard to give them the benefit of the doubt from that perspective. So I think in general, if we look at the tea leaves here, and I realize that it's not ideal often to look at some of the implications of punishments, but the fact that they were punished for conduct over 2 years, to me, says the championship was tainted, and anyone who alleges otherwise is simply living in a fantasy land that it is very difficult for me to countenance.
John Morosi with us here on 95.7 The Game. How is Manfred viewed by the players, other executives? What's his, I don't necessarily want to say approval rating, but to get my point across, I guess I'll say approval rating.
Sure, no, it's a fair question. I think that at the end of the day, let's not forget the essential construct of baseball. Rob Manfred works for the owners. And the owners, I believe right now, still as of this moment, are fully supportive of the commissioner. We have not seen owners in large numbers breaking ranks and criticizing the commissioner. Even looking at the owners of the teams that have played the Astros in recent playoffs, we have not seen on the record criticisms about the handling of that circumstance on the part of those owners. So I really think that his position with the people whose opinion really matters of him, the owners, is still very, very strong. The players, of course, we have seen criticisms leveled by Trevor Bauer and Chris Bryant and Cody Bellinger of different severity thereof, and other players as well. I think it's important to note the context. We are on the verge of a new negotiation of a basic agreement, so there is that level of adversarial positioning between the players and the owners. I think that this is certainly something that in time will dissipate as it relates to Rob Manfred's legacy as commissioner. But what has to happen here in the next couple of years is a reversal of what's been a decline in attendance and an effort towards repositioning the game in a better way for the future. There are rule changes this year. The commissioner has talked about wanting to expand the sport to 32 teams. We have seen the reports recently about the potential change in playoff structure. But the Astros issue has blocked everything else. It has blocked the sunlight from everything else in the game. It's totally been an eclipse here this spring training. And until that goes away, the real work of finding out what the game is going to look like in 5 years is getting delayed. And that's a concern for everybody that cares about the game. So this, to me, the commissioner will be able to move past this. I'm very sure of that. But at some point in time, the stakeholders in the game have to find a way to get baseball's attendance back up, to resolve the various stadium situations that exist around the game, and to find out what this sport's going to look like in 5 and 10 years down the road. And those are the questions, guys, I believe, that are truly going to determine the success of Rob Manfred's tenure as commissioner of baseball.
MLB insider for both Fox Sports and the MLB Network, John Morosi, kind enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. Great stuff as always, John. Thank you so much for the time.
My pleasure, guys. We'll get back to breaking down the Giants and the A's rosters here in the coming weeks, but I fully understand this is the topic in baseball right now.
They had a big trade over the weekend, John. The 16-year drought is over.
Yeah, Birch Smith, right? Birch Smith getting moved there between those two franchises. We're going to certainly, I think, analyze every aspect of the big Birch Smith blockbuster next time when we talk, okay?
Awesome. Thank you, John.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Commissioner Rob Manfred, two media sessions over the weekend. He spoke with Carl Ravitch, and then he spoke with the media in Florida. It could not have gone worse. Sometimes a guy at a media session or at a press conference, they say one stupid thing and everyone gravitates to that, and you miss 98% of what was discussed elsewhere, right? This was like literally every comment was headline worthy. Manfred just in the crosshairs. We're going to play that for you next here on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe, Low, and Dims.
I'm the greatest basketball player on the planet.
On 95.7, The Game.
Neither gentleman came in today and talked about working out or getting anything done this weekend from a physical standpoint.
He did. He worked out.
He said he did a lot of mental reps.
No, and he said he shot basketball.
He did get some shots up.
Put some shots up,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, good for you.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, he's been putting in time. He's putting in the time.
It clear you will not be doing any work.
It's for dibs, Joe.
Are you wearing jeans in this game?
Yes.
When you said that, Guru looked like you ripped his heart out in, what was it, Indiana, which Indiana Jones was it?
Temple of Doom.
Temple of Doom. It looked like Temple of Doom. He was so disappointed. He looked at you, why?
Indy, cover your heart.
That was good. Joe,
good ball.
It's sort of like, Joe, there are some 8-9-year-old kids out there that you know it. You put them at the free throw line, they'd probably shoot better. Or just get them on the court. They've been practicing, and they could probably outshoot us all. Would you not agree?
And
guess
kids that practice every – yeah,
yes,
sure.
I would say maybe 7 or 6, and outshoot us because they just practice every day. Now, if you play in a game, what would you do to the kid, though? Even though he can shoot, how many times would you just swat his ball? Because he's little. He's not that he can't shoot you and beat you in pig or horse, but if you're playing a game with the little fella, you're like, okay, little fella. You know, and you just – that's what I'm planning.
You're just going to swat everything. You want me to come up with a prop for your blocks.
Yes.
The over-under blocks prop.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to have a whole offering for everyone.
How many steals did I get? Hey, did I make him call uncle? Does he quit? I mean, have this stuff out there because it's like a little kid. He can shoot probably way better. So I'm like, man. But he's like that little kid. You pat on the head and say, good job, son. That's fine. That's where I'm at with him. So you're maybe a way better shooter. You might just be unbelievable, but you're still a kid. Easy, son. You're just a cub, and now you want to run to Pride.
Woo! And you just sit back, and you have been taking all this in, just going about your work diligently.
It's great. It's great. It makes no sense, and I can't wait to see you out there, first of all.
It's like Andre Berto versus Marcos Maidana. Dibs is Maidana. He's not saying anything. Berto was talking and dancing and acting a fool the whole time up until the fight, and then Maidana did exactly what he needed to do to dominate.
It's just gibberish.
I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm just, it reminds me of Maidana Berto.
Either he's going to play off me, and he's already said that I can shoot the basketball, so then he's going to get yak him and drawers in his face, or he's going to come up on me, and inevitably I will go by him. Maybe not every time, but I will go by him to the hoop, left hand, right hand. Just depends on how he wants it. So ultimately, him stopping me is not my concern. Me stopping him is more of a concern because he's a brute. He's a bruiser. He's a hoss. He's a heifer. And ultimately, unless we get somebody who actually understands adjudicating, officiating, and allows me to positionally play defense, there's no way I could stop the physicality of a 280-pound offensive lineman, basically.
Hoping to get Kalena Azubuki in as the official for the event. More on that throughout. Cody Bellinger, outfielder, first baseman for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Players are starting to speak out on the Astros scandal. They've been quiet for a while. It seems like they've had enough. Here's Bellinger over the weekend.
I thought Manfred's punishment was weak, giving him immunity. I mean, these guys were cheating for 3 years. I think what people don't realize is Altuve stole an MVP from Judge in 17. Everyone knows they stole the ring from us. I know personally I lost respect for those guys. I think I would say everyone in the show in the big leagues lost respect for those guys. I don't know what human hits a walk-off home run against Aroldis Chapman to send your team to the World Series. And one has the thought to say, don't rip my jersey off. But two, go in the tunnel, change your shirt, and then come out and do your interview. Like that makes no sense to me. It makes zero sense to me. Because I know me. Gary Sanchez said yesterday, you can rip my shirt off, my pants off. I sent my team the World Series off for Aroldis Chapman in the ninth inning at home. You can do, I'm going crazy.
They're getting testy in Houston. Carlos Correa of the Astros heard these comments and then he fired back.
Didn't want to get his shirt ripped off? I'm going to tell you. Earlier in the year, he hit a walk-off at Minute Maid Park. I ripped off his shirt with Tony Kemp. There is pictures of that. There is videos of that. You can go look at it. I ripped off his shirt. His wife told my wife, why is Carlos ripping out to his shirt? Like, I don't like that. I don't like that. So when he's walking, so he's running from third base to home plate, I'm the guy up front. I'm the guy up front, the first one waiting for him. He's like, don't take my shirt off. The second reason that he don't want me to talk about this, but I'm going to say it, is because he got an unfinished tattoo on his collarbone right here that honestly looked terrible. It was a bad tattoo. And he didn't want nobody to see it. He didn't want to show it at all. So one, he didn't want to take his shirt off, because his wife had told my wife early in the year for me to not do that, so he was telling me to not do it. And number two, he had an unfinished tattoo that looked kind of bad that he didn't want people to see and people to talk about. That was the reason. But Altuve has never cheated. He didn't cheat in 2017 when nobody knew about the system. Well, he cheated in 2019. when he knows people are going to be talking about what happened in 2017. Altuve has played the game clean, always, always.
Okay. I'd like to know how or why his home road splits that season in the playoffs are just so dramatic, but that's maybe a conversation for another day. The bad tattoo case. He didn't want the shirt ripped off because apparently he had a bad tattoo. So the internet went wild. They went into every social media platform that Altuve's got. They found every shirtless picture of Jose Altuve that exists. No tattoos anywhere. None. You don't see them. So everyone's going nuts saying Correa's lying. Then there's this morning. This is from Jake Kaplan. He's got the blue check mark. He writes about the Astros for The Athletic. This is a tweet he sent out about 30 minutes ago. Jose Altuve just walked into the Astros clubhouse, changed his shirt in front of his locker, where a throng of reporters and cameramen were waiting. He grabbed a bat and left to go to the batting cage. He indeed has a tattoo. So maybe giving some credence to the Correa story, but every time you hear someone speak out on this, the situation gets better or worse, yeah, in your opinion. Better or worse?
It's sort of like it's crazy. You hear kids, you know, when he hit me, mom, he hit me first. Well, because he was laughing. Oh, because he wouldn't let me close the door. You know how your kids, you see them start to do it, Dibs. You've been down this road, and Joe, you see it all the time. One looks, you're getting on one, and he laughs. He said, stop laughing at me. It's going back and forth, and that's what you have now. Now you have a bunch of child's play. One's trying to one-up do it. Look, what they did was wrong. They know what they did was wrong. And you could justify, talk about who had a tattoo and the shirts. You know why you didn't want your shirt ripped off. And that's the worst thing that they can do, is continue down this rabbit hole of not owning it. You own it. You get caught with your hand in the cookie jar, you own it up and just say, you know what, you got me. And that's what everyone in the commission has said. We did a horrible job policing this. We got calls, but you know what? We were too busy. We should have taken more attention to it. Maybe we're thinking about doing a better job of policing the teams. Maybe the league will put a guy in each locker in each game on game day. They get to go through and search guys. If we got to treat these guys like kids because of the fact the game is tarnished, then we'll do that. That's where the commissioner comes out and says, how do we fix this? How do we fix this thing? This is not happening on my watch. I'm not going to go down as one of these commissioners that didn't take this thing serious. This is horrible, egregious act that's happened, and we're going to fix it. And if you say, you know what, this is going to come out of the salary, this is coming out of the cap, and each team is going to have to pay a guy that travels, whatever, or just like you have at officials that you don't know who's going to be,
right,
and you have them in the locker, and they get to check what's going on. If that's the case, what you got to do, and treat guys like kids because you can't trust GMs, and you can't trust, you know, skippers, and can't show up to players, then do it. You act like kids.
You can't go forward, though, until you fully reconcile with the past. And Rob Manfred continues to try to move this forward, saying, like, all the things you're saying, those are all great suggestions. Baseball will make some moves in order to prevent this in the future, but there's still so many unanswered questions about the past.
What can you fix about the past? You know what I'm saying?
You can't fix the past, but you have to reconcile with,
right,
it. And to your point, you have to completely come clean. And Rob Manfred is not doing a great job of being fully transparent about any of this.
You know what's underneath the cover, Dibs. You got to look at it. You want me to take my pants off? you know what I'm saying?
Do we really know, though?
I'll speak for Dibs. The answer is no. Keep your pants on.
I'll show you. If that's
No. Sit down.
Okay.
He's going to take his pants. Keep your pants on.
My point I'm trying to make is, look, we know. We understand what's there.
But go ahead and save that for HR, please, because this is unacceptable.
Dibs, as he continues to build this HR file. What a settlement you're going to have coming one
day. Yeah, we're going to go ahead and mark the tape on that one, and I'll see you guys in probably July. By the time I'm able to get over the PTSD.
From Barbados.
Yes, thank you. Dibs is working from home going forward.
You might not want to travel there.
But Barbados?
Corona, maybe. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's a Caribbean.
Never know. Got to travel on the plane.
By that logic, literally everywhere.
Get an Atlas and come back and see me over there.
Not just talking about
Atlas Shrugged over here. Atlas Shrugged. Atlas, take a playoff. Go ahead and put that world down.
Please.
Did Manfred make a mistake by granting the Astros players immunity? Is that a mistake? Because the only way he was going to get the information he needed on this was by doing that. Otherwise, everyone's going to lie. Everyone's going to keep their mouth shut. Any punishment you hand out, the first thought's going to be, that's fine. I'm going to the greatest union on earth, and I'm going to appeal.
Arbitration.
Good luck trying to bring me down.
Absolutely.
Guys who test positive for PEDs have cases. Like the Ryan Braun thing, the way he smeared that guy into oblivion with that. And that's a positive test. And even that with all that evidence, you would not have enough evidence in this situation to be able to hand down any legitimate punishments to any players. So did he make a mistake handing them immunity? Because he apparently got what he needed in terms of what was happening. But the fact that no players are going to A, lose any money, B, be suspended any games, C, have the World Series stripped. I think that's why guys like Cody Bellinger and so many other players around baseball are ticked off. There's no punishment coming down
whatsoever.
Right,
and I don't think that he got all the information. So if you grant somebody immunity in exchange for the whole story, and we haven't gotten the whole story. And
Sammy the Bull.
I know you've got quotes on what Manfred said as it pertains to buzzers. Were they using buzzers or not? We still don't know definitively, and that's to my point about reconciling with the past, Lo. We don't fully know whether or not they actually were using buzzers or not. This whole tattoo scenario is fascinating as well. According to one reporter, he had a tattoo exposing a tattoo on his left shoulder that said Melanie. Well, his wife's name is not Melanie, and he's been married since 2006, according to my quick research, to a woman named Nina. So do you really have a tattoo from somebody named Melanie? And if it wasn't there, like you're saying, all these images of Altuve from years ago, okay. Is this maybe a temporary tattoo?
Let that be a lesson to the kids. Don't tattoo anyone's name outside of your children on you.
No, that's an interesting point.
Unless you can guarantee that you're going to stay the course.
But
otherwise, that's a bad look.
Maybe he broke up with her. Maybe it's Melanie. Who cares? What is that going to really do? Does it change the way he's getting paid? Is it going to change the outlook of him in baseball? Okay, I got a tattoo on my name named Joe on my ass, and it's Joe. Okay, another one is Dibs.
Can you maybe anatomically change up your game?
No, I'm not.
Instead of talking about dropping your pants every few minutes?
Pants on the ground.
It's nauseating.
You know what's nauseating? I'm hearing this. Melanie, who cares? The dude got a tattoo.
That would actually make some sense to me as to why he didn't want the jersey ripped off, though. If he came out and said, look, all right, fine. Here's what it is. I have a tattoo of a former girlfriend on my shoulder. I'm embarrassed. My wife hates it. I haven't gotten it removed. And if Correa rips off my jersey again, my wife has to see this woman's name on my chest, and it's not good for me. I could look at that and at least be like, all right, you're still a cheat. But at the same time, I can now understand at least one of the 10,000 elements of this story. Like, that one would make sense. Where's Reddick? Like, Reddick looked like he actually just had the buzzer on his shoulder.
Right.
I haven't heard his reason, rationale. I know
Correa,
he got a haircut.
In the quote you played from Correa, he's talking about how Jose's not a cheater and this and that. Jose admitted that he is a cheater from 2017. So for him to come out and say that Jose Altuve did it right, he never cheated. The guy admitted, all of you admitted to cheating. Maybe he didn't use a buzzer. But Carlos Correa is not doing any favors to Altuve.
All right, you are listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Good morning and welcome to your 7 o'clock hour of Joe Lowe and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Brian Scalabrine in just a moment, but first, today is where it all starts. The Disgrace at Chase, one-on-one, Lowe versus Dibs, 9 days from today, Wednesday, February 26th at Chase Center. We're doing a show there. They're playing one-on-one, but you, 10 of you specifically, will have the chance to win an entry into the free throw contest that's happening as well. So it's 9 days from today. Be available Wednesday in the morning, February 26th, 7:45 and 8:45 a.m. every day this week. Those are the 10 spots we're giving away. We're going to ask a trivia question based on something we discuss. For example, at 7:45, the question is going to be based on something we discuss from now until 7:30. At 8:45, the trivia question is going to be based on something we say and discuss from 8 to 8:30. It's going to be like that every single day. That's how you're going to have a chance to win. Show the dedication. Listen to the show. Have your opportunity to join us at Chase Center. Right now, we're going to the phones. On the line is radio.com sports NBA insider Brian Scalabrine. Insider calls are brought to you by 5-Hour Energy Shots, now in two great tropical flavors. Brian, we appreciate the time this morning. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Let's start with this. What did you think of the new NBA All-Star Game format last night? Quite exciting down the stretch, if I may say.
Sure. You know what's funny about this is people are acting like it's like, oh my God, I can't believe this new invention. Like, we've been playing 2-11 our whole lives. We've been hitting game-winning shots every single game. I've never played a time game growing up when we, you know, outside of, you know, AAU or whatever. So I do like it, and I like it, the ending and the excitement behind it. But I will give. I don't know if the All-Star players were motivated yesterday because of the Kobe Bryant thing, but I will say, man, the All-Star game has been a big time dud over the years. Last night was pretty exciting, and I feel like the guys were really into it.
Just to see the players on the floor late in the game not wanting to come out in this era of load management, that was refreshing in and of itself. When you see the competitive fire and the competitive nature of the game, do you see any way that the All-Star game can improve, or have we finally found the template to where this is going to be the model going forward?
Well, I obviously with the Kobe Bryant thing, it was a lot of emotion yesterday. I thought that the guys, and you remember what Kobe was about. Like, Kobe was not about load management. Go look at the last, like, 9 games he played before he pops his Achilles tendon. You'll be shocked by the amount of minutes that he was playing. So he wasn't about that. He was about going out there and playing hard. I could totally see the guys sort of being inspired by that. NBA players in general, over the course of 82 games, a season long before the playoffs, they find different reasons to be motivated. I truly thought that last night it was like, let's go do this for Kobe. It's about Kobe. And the idea that, you know, Kawhi Leonard won the MVP is the Kobe Bryant MVP award. So I think there's a lot of that going on. Now, will it be sustaining? I don't know. But what we saw, I have to admit, maybe the Magic Johnson way back when he got the MVP and he came back from, you know, because he was suspended because of the HIV, or not suspended, he decided to quit because of the HIV thing. That was an inspiring All-Star game, but this was maybe the best All-Star game I've ever seen, especially in this era.
Where is basketball right now? Do you think it's in a good place? Is enough young talent when you watch the rookie game and watch Zion and all the young guys getting after it? You know that passing of the torch, you see LeBron's getting elder. Where is basketball in your opinion?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, from a basketball standpoint, like young talent, marketing, people dialing into highlights and wanting to watch YouTube and all that stuff, I think basketball is at a really good place. As far as like people sitting down and spending 2.5 hours and going through and watching games, probably not so much. But I'll tell you, the Warriors, would like them coming back next year would be probably be really important for the game. So all those nasty televised games this year where like half the people don't even know who these players are. So that has a little bit of effect. But young talent, think about a guy like Trae Young. He's in his second year, and I fans all over the world have voted for him. He plays for Atlanta. Like, that would have never happened, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. So I think the individual player, people are really, really excited about. You got Ja Morant in Memphis. You have Zion that you mentioned in New Orleans. So there's a lot of good young talent that people are really excited to watch. But as far as the ratings day in and day out, I'm sure that the NBA wants to figure out different ways so they can address that issue.
Brian Scalabrine, NBA champ, radio.com, NBA insider with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. I'm sure you've been paying attention to what the Warriors have been up to over the last year. They're battling some injuries. It's being called a gap year. They just swung the D'Angelo Russell for Andrew Wiggins trade. Big picture here, next 2, 3, 4 years, does this team have a legitimate shot to come back and be a serious contender given the current landscape of the NBA, or is that championship window closed in your opinion?
Well, it's not going to be the dominance that they once were, right? We all understand that. Like, the idea that when they had Kevin Durant, besides injuries, there's no way they were going to lose with those type of players. But the question is, and here's where I stand, right? They have 2 really high picks. They have their pick this year and then whatever the Minnesota pick. And I think people, when you look at Minnesota moving forward, people are going to covet that pick. People are going to want that pick, especially teams right in the middle. You know, they're going to say, I'll take on the $30 million. We'll send you 2 dynamic wings, but you have to send us picks. So I have no doubt that the Warriors will restock their team, and it's really hard to find the stars. Like, you have Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. It's the other guys that when they fit into those playing with those 2 stars, they can really overplay their contract. So, and then here's where I stand when it comes to those 2. Like, you could talk about them not having this or them not having that. Here's what, good luck. If they can get 2 dynamic wings, think about the Western Conference. You have to guard LeBron, so you need size, versatility, and you got to guard Kawhi Leonard. If you can get 2 wing players that could shoot the three and defend at a high level. My thing to the rest of the NBA, good luck eliminating Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. And if, you know, hey, there's a lot of good teams out there, a lot of good teams out west. But we've seen what, like, Klay Thompson does with his back against the wall, down 13 to Oklahoma City. We've seen Steph Curry, you know, he had the great second half when Kevin Durant got hurt against Houston. My thing to the rest of the league, good luck trying to eliminate those guys in the playoffs, no matter what seed they are. But I do think that they'll end up flipping Wiggins and two picks for, you know, just more like players that are going to be championship ready. And I'm not trying to disrespect Wiggins or anything like that, but I think that playoff level is a different animal. He's really just trying to get his feet wet in the regular season and have some sustainable success in the regular season. The playoffs are a whole new animal. That guy, whoever they get, has to stare LeBron and Kawhi Leonard or Paul George or even Anthony Davis in the eye and be able to stop those guys. That's not easy to do. So, but I'm really optimistic that the Warriors not get back to being the dominant force that they were, but I'm optimistic that they can be a hard out in the playoffs. If not, you know, put some things together and win it all. It won't be the dynasty that they had before.
If you look around the association and you play the role of Bob Myers, who would that player be? Is it Jimmy Butler? Is it somebody who's more offensive?
No, you're not kidding him. Did you guys watch Aaron Gordon in the slam dunk contest? It'd be like guys like that.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.